Blog Talk Radio.
This is Cyril Quinn, and the Saturday morning wake-up call is coming up right now.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call. I am the aforementioned Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next 90 minutes on this 3rd of September, 2011. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. I'm on the chat line right now, so anybody who wants to chime in, any questions, comments, you can certainly hit me up on the chat line. Also, you can follow me at facebook.com/CyrilQuinn or follow me at twitter.com/WilliamGerald. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180, 347-215-6180. And we're going to begin with some college football. The first full weekend of college football, obviously the season kicked off on Thursday, had a couple games there with Wisconsin and Georgia Tech and some of those teams taking care of business. Today you're going to have your first major, your first championship caliber game in terms of LSU, Oregon. This is an elimination game as far as I'm concerned, especially for Oregon. See, you know, LSU, we've seen teams in the SEC lose games early in the season and still recover to win a national championship or to make the national championship game. Oregon loses this game, they're not going to be playing for the national championship. I mean, that's all there is to it. The schedule, you know, they just don't have enough non-conference power out of in terms of their scheduling. And, you know, there's just too many teams. So this is basically, to me, an elimination game for Oregon. Oregon has a tremendous opportunity to kind of make a statement here. It's a referendum game for their program as far as I'm concerned. Look at the last 3 years in big spots, you know, despite how, you know, how gaudy their record has been, you know, they've won 10 games. They've won 10 more games the last couple of years. When they've been put on these big stages, they've had some trouble. You go back to 2009, losing to Boise State. The opening weekend, they had the LeGarrette Blount punching the Boise State player. A year later, losing Ohio State in the Rose Bowl, 26-17. And last year, of course, they fell to Auburn in the national championship in 22-19. Oregon needs to win this game, you know, and not only for Oregon, but also for the Pac-10. We know what the SEC is. I mean, the SEC is a premier conference in the country, without question. If LSU loses this game, nobody's going to be running and screaming, you know, the SEC stinks, all right? LSU has won 2 national championships in the last 9 years. Nobody's going to rip LSU if they lose this game. But for Oregon, to me, this is a borderline must-win game. And listen, Oregon, LSU would not be playing without a starting quarterback. We know this, but like I said last week, there's not a big difference between Jordan Jefferson and Jared Lee. For Oregon, they're gonna be missing their starting cornerback Cliff Harris, who was All-American last season, and that which should not hurt them because LSU does not throw the ball a lot. That's not what LSU is known for. So, again, this is a game that certainly will have national championship ramifications. SEC has been good in these spots, and especially in this particular game, the 3-0. Now, mind you, all three of the games that they've played in this kickoff classic have been against ACC teams. ACC teams, we know that the ACC is not the toughest conference there is, so keep that in mind. But overall, the SEC against non-conference opponents has been, they've been tough on those on non-SEC opponents. Normally, the SEC are the conference that beats up on itself, and they normally beat up on other teams. So definitely be looking forward to it as LSU Oregon will play in Dallas in Jerry's World down in Arlington. I don't know if they're going to open. I wonder what their attendance is going to be for that game. I know for the Super Bowl it was over 100,000 people. Now, remember, they had some issues with people getting displaced and, you know, not having enough not having enough seats, and people get being, you know, the seats were a problem. People were asked to leave out of their seats, and there's this big mess. It still might be ongoing as far as the lawyers and lawsuits are concerned. It still might be ongoing from this past Super Bowl. So but I'll be very interested to get an attendance figure on how many people will be at that game. Last night you had the first major upset in college football. This is why you love college football. Baylor goes out there, takes out TCU, 50-48. Now Baylor last year was a middle of the road Big 12 team. Good offense, you know, terrible defense. 7-6, got off to a quick start, but you know, they go out there and take out a TCU team that's been known for defense. I mean, TCU has had the best defense in the country for the past three or four or five years, or one of the best defenses in the country as far as numbers are concerned. Points allowed, yards allowed, and to get it, Baylor goes out there and puts 50 on them, puts 34 in the first half. I had to check the TV again to see what is it, the second quarter or third quarter. Watch out for this guy, Robert Griffin III. This dude is a junior quarterback. He is a pro prospect. I'll be shocked if he doesn't come out after this year. There's no question that he's a pro, you know, can make every throw. I heard this morning they were talking about that this is the guy who they said Terrell Pryor should have been in terms of his potential and the kind of talent that he has. Dude, he can run, throw. Baylor has one of the best offenses, passing offenses in the country. I mean, it didn't take me a lot of games. It won't take me 6 or 7 games to watch Baylor to figure that out. So they, you know, had the first shocking game of the season at home, taking out TCU 50-48 at 50-48. At one point in the game, Baylor was up 47-23. TCU made a late run, but fell short as Robert Griffin again, 359 yards passing and 5 touchdowns. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, a jam packed edition, 90 minutes. We'll have NFL previews of the NFC East. We'll go Pac-12, we'll go Big 12, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. After the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, welcome back, Cyril Quinn, taking you to 12:30 and 12:30 p.m. as we go 90 minutes today on this. Again, a lot to do, a lot to talk about. Saturday morning headlines: Oklahoma President David Boren expects to decide whether or not Oklahoma football will remain in the Big 12 in the next 3 weeks or so. Of course, you had Texas A&M announcing that they're going to leave the Big 12, and they are certainly will be expected to join the SEC conference next summer. Listen, the Texas A&M move is going to set off a chain link of events that will change the course of college football. The Big 12, as we know it, is about to dissipate. Oklahoma is going to be gone. You're going to have some other teams that are going to hop out. I wouldn't be surprised if you have 3 or 4 teams, but the remaining teams you have in the Big 12, that 4 of them, including Oklahoma, go to the Pac-12 to make it the Pac-16, have Texas A&M go to the ACC, excuse me, Texas A&M go to the SEC, they're basically going to be four major conferences. You have the PAC whatever. You'll have the Big 12, excuse me, not Big 12, but Big 10 plus how many teams, SEC, and then SEC. And I think a combination, I think the ACC and Big East are going to get together. So I think you'll have the SEC, the Pac-10, Pac-16, the Big 10, and a combination of the SEC, I say, versus the ACC, combination of the SEC, the ACC, and the Big East. I think you're going to have four superpower conferences. Who knows what Texas does? Texas could be independent. I mean, remember, they have one of the largest television contracts in the country. Who's going to be afraid? Who's going to run away from who's not going to want to schedule Texas for a home and home with all the money that can be made? So to me, Texas A&M leaving the Big 12 is going to set off again. It's going to change college football forever as we know it. Roger Clemens will have to face another trial about lying and about, of course, his lying and drug use come April 17th. Prosecutors, and here was an interesting comment before I even get to that. He's going to have to face another trial. You remember the prosecution dropped the ball with the whole presenting inadmissible evidence that got Clemens off the hook. But here's a statement that prosecutors made. Prosecutors say throwing out the indictment would violate society's interest in seeing the violations of the law dealt. By raise of hand, how many people want to see the Roger Clemens trial again? Anyone? Anybody? Come on, it got to be somebody out there. Somebody who? Nobody. Oh, nobody wants to see. Okay, that's interesting. Because I don't want to see it either. I mean, please, can we move on from this? I mean, the prosecution. Like I said, the prosecution leave Clemens alone. You know, it's. You know, he's got a great attorney in Rusty Harden. This thing is going to be just a waste of time, a waste of taxpayers' money. So you're going to see that again come next spring. Luckily, it's not until next April. But again, prosecution is going to take another shot at making fools of themselves. I don't know which prosecutor would drop the ball this time. That's to me will be the only question mark in the case of the Roger Clemens trial. Colts, the Indianapolis Colts have hired Jim Tressel as their game day consultant for reviewing replays. Two questions here. One, why would the Colts hire Jim Tressel? Okay. And two, why would Jim Tressel take this job? Now, I understand the whole idea, the whole fact that Caldwell is apparently close to Tressel. Tressel has had a few of his players be drafted by Indianapolis. So I get that. But again, I don't. Do you need a game day consultant? I mean, I had never even heard that position. You can't have one of your assistant coaches in the booth. Don't you have guys that do that? Assistant coaches in the booth review plays like that? Why do you need Jim Tressel? I don't. And when you get Jim Tressel, you're going to go from head coach of one of the most well-known, powerful football programs in the country to being a game day consultant? Yikes. I mean, how the mighty have fallen. If I'm Jim Tressel, they offer me that. Maybe Jim Tressel feels like that is his way into the NFL. Maybe that's. I mean, I'm trying to help him. I'm trying to rationalize this move. I really am. Maybe that is the case. I don't know, but it's a very strange move, peculiar move by the Jim Tressel and the Indianapolis Colts, to say the least. 13 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. When we return, we'll talk some baseball, and we also have our preview to Big 12. That's coming up and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Before we get into the baseball here, the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call poll question of the morning is, and I just put it on the chat line for my Blog Talk Radio audience, is should professional athletes be allowed to tweet? A couple guys in the NFL had some issues with Twitter. Well, I shouldn't say had issues with Twitter, but were got into some put themselves in the news with their tweets. We'll talk about that. And there's no right or wrong answer to it. It's not a black and white issue whatsoever, especially when you start talking about constitutional freedom of speech. But we'll talk more about that later on in the program. Right now, we're going to get into some baseball. Last night, the San Francisco Giants got a must-win game. I shouldn't say must-win, but a much-needed game as they took out the Arizona Diamondbacks, Cardinals, 6-2. Matt Cain getting the win. Cain's been great this year. Cain and Lincecum have been off the charts. I mean, they've been very good. They're pitching to under 3 ERAs and really don't have much to show for it as far as the wins goes because the Giants can't score. But he pitched well. Giants get, again, a much-needed win, cooling off the Diamondbacks, who have won 9 straight games coming in, I believe. Now they find themselves 5 games behind the Diamondbacks. And for all intents and purposes, and this is a home series for the Giants, they need to sweep the Diamondbacks and, put some heat on them. If they can sweep them, they'll be, 3 games out. They still have another series to play with them, to play against them later on this month. I'm very interested to watch this race because normally when a team has a five or six game lead in September, you normally say it's a wrap. I'm not so sure. I have a lot of respect for the Giants and the championship pedigree. And this, Arizona has never been here before as far as this group of players, this particular group. Very interesting to see how they deal with the pressure of September. We've seen many teams collapse come September, in the month of September. So keep your eyes on that series. Carlos Beltran finally breaks out 4-for-4 and hits his 17th home run of the season. Also, you had Red Sox getting pounced by the Texas Rangers, 10-0. You can almost see this one coming. I mean, Red Sox coming off that emotional series with the Yankees and all the hype that goes into those two teams meet up, a natural letdown. And plus, Texas is a very good team to begin with. Texas, shutting out Boston 10-0. Yankees win, edge out Toronto 3-2. So now Yankees find themselves a half game ahead of the Red Sox for that race for best record in the American League and also a race for the American League East Championship, which is important. I know you had wild cards come out and win World Series and make it to the World Series, but to me, if you're the Yankees or the Red Sox, I mean, you much rather play Detroit in the first round than play Texas. Texas is going to be a tough out. Whoever has to deal with that group. And that group, they have a great lineup. The pitching has been better than expected. They have a deep bullpen. Made it to the World Series last year and have no fear. And I mean no fear of either one of those teams. Now, Detroit can get hot with Verlander, but I don't expect much out of them. Texas is somebody that could scare some people. Also, Detroit knocks around Chicago White Sox 8-1. They're in full control of their division. These division races, for the most part, are over. Outside the American League East, I mean, you look at, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Detroit, those teams have big leads in terms of their race, in terms of their divisions. We know Atlanta and Philadelphia are going to be in the wild card. We know Boston and New York are going to take up the division in a wild card spot. The only real race out there remaining is the National League West, to me, with the Giants and Diamondbacks, because I'm not sure about the Diamondbacks, like I mentioned before. I mean, you want to say American League West with the Angels and Texas. Texas right now is 4.5 games up. I don't think the Angels – I'll be surprised if the Angels – and I'm not going to count the Angels out, but I'll be surprised if Texas does not win that division. So, really, the races in these divisions are over. I mentioned it because – a month ago, everybody, with the exception, I would say, of Philadelphia, of the NL East, everybody was close. I mean, all those. You know, do you remember way back when all four teams, when you had a 4-team race in the National League Central? You had almost a 3-team race in American League East. I mean, that has, even, you know, with the Central, you had Detroit, Cleveland, the White Sox. That has, you know, dissipated in a hurry as these teams are starting to have separated themselves and are now geared towards making a run in October. There's been a lot of talk. Justin Verlander last night in that 8-1 victory over the White Sox won his 21st game of the season. Verlander is 21-5 with a 2.34 ERA. He has been the best pitcher in baseball and will hands down win the Cy Young. There's been a lot of talk about Verlander possibly being the American League MVP, and, you know, the basis of that argument is, well, you know, Detroit's going to win a division. You know, if he wasn't, you know, if he wasn't having the year he was having, they probably wouldn't be a playoff team. Now, it is a legitimate argument, and I would not debate it as far as the fact that they would not be a playoff team without Verlander. But I'll say this. I have my theory on MVP awards is, to me, and I have two theories, one in regards to last place, one in regards to pitchers, and the other one is in regards to teams, to players winning the MVP on last place teams. To me, in order for a pitcher to win the MVP, there can't be anybody, as far as I'm concerned, anybody else having a big, I mean, any other everyday player having a big time year. Either that or that pitcher has to be having a historical year. And neither one is the case in this situation. Verlander has been great. He's been tremendous. I'm not taking anything away from him. The guy, he's headed towards a Hall of Fame caliber career. I mean, he's 28 years old, already has 104 wins. But, you know, 10, 15 years from now, we're not going to be looking at Justin Verlander and saying, whoa, do you remember 2011? I don't think he's having a historically great season. And also, you look at these other guys, these everyday players who are having MVP caliber years. I mean, it's a laundry list. I mean, you have, you know, Curtis Granderson. You have a Jose Bautista. You have a Adrian Gonzalez. Jacoby Ellsbury. I mean, you think about Curtis Granderson, if I had a vote, it would be Curtis Granderson, and I hate the Yankees. The guy is going to have over 40 home runs, score about 140 runs, drive in 120 runs, steal over 30 bases. I mean, you can't have a better year than that. And you take him off the Yankees would not, forget about winning the division, Yankees might not make the playoffs without Curtis Granderson this year. You remember, A-Rod has been a non-factor this year. Jeter's been, you know, he's gotten hot recently, but he's, for the most part, he's been up and down. Even Teixeira, with all the home runs he's hit, has been inconsistent. Posada's been awful. Now, sure, Cano has been great. Brett Gardner's been pretty good. Andrew Jones has been decent. But, you take Granderson out of that lineup, it's a different – that lineup is not potent at all, in my opinion, with what's going on with the rest of those guys. Again, in a year where you have so many other dominant offensive players having great years, Verlander cannot be the MVP, because you can't tell me that Verlander is more valuable, that a guy whose pitches once every 5 days is more valuable than a guy who plays every single day at a high level. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me. So again, if Verlander were having a historically great year, and there were no other candidates, offensive candidates, everyday players whose years stood out, then I'll say, okay, this might be one of those unique years. But that is not the case whatsoever in this particular season. 347-215-6180 is your call number. This is Cyril Quinn on this edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. When we return, we'll take a look at the Big 12. Can Oklahoma start and finish number one? And also, who is the best quarterback in pro? Who is the NFL's best quarterback? We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Other Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, as we discuss the world of sports. Saturday Morning Wake Up Call poll question of the morning is: should professional athletes be allowed to tweet? We'll touch on that as the program goes along later on in the program. As we take you for another hour, 28 minutes after 11, 30 minutes after 11 o'clock hour on this 3rd of September. 2011. We're going to look at the Big 12 here. Big 12, certainly one of the preeminent conferences in college football, and begin at the top with the Oklahoma Sooners as the team to beat. I mean, there's no question about it. Oklahoma returns 16 returning starters. They have one of the one of the best quarterbacks in the country in Landry Jones. Arguably the best wide receiver tandem with Brian Broyles and Kenny Stills. And Oklahoma is loaded offensively. I mean, there's no two ways about it. Good enough running game, very good offensive line. The question about Oklahoma to me is their defense. As you all know, in the offseason, Austin Box tragically passed away. He's one of the quality linebackers. And Travis Lewis is currently injured. He'll be back. He's going to miss the first part of the season. He'll be back, but Travis Lewis is a All-American candidate. Last year, Oklahoma struggled with stopping the run. And teams ran all over Oklahoma last year. Again, that, to me, is something that you just cannot ignore. We talk about terms, especially in a conference, that is loaded with great offenses. I mean, look at Baylor. Baylor could go through, Baylor on a good day can go out there and put 30 or 40 points out there. You're loaded. You have Oklahoma State, you have Texas A&M, you have these teams in the Big 12 who are, you know, who have great offenses and who can put points up in a hurry. That has to be a concern if you're Bob Stoops. With that said, I think Oklahoma does win this conference. They have a tough schedule. I mean, they're at Florida State in a couple of weeks, at Oklahoma State, and of course will be down in Dallas. Will be in Dallas for their annual Red River Showdown with Texas. And they host Texas A&M, which will not be an easy game. Good news for them, they don't have to deal with Nebraska this year. So that, you know, that certainly is a bonus. And as you know, that, listen, you have to have a little luck, and you have to have, you know, if you want to try to win a national championship, certainly the schedule is a major factor in whether or not a team is going to win a national championship. Again, big picture, little picture, small picture, I think Oklahoma wins this conference. Big picture, I don't think Oklahoma is going to win a national championship with that defense. I just think that will eventually catch up with them. And also remember, Bob Stoops, you know, this program has been a top program since Stoops got here in 99. You know, they've been in four national championship games. They won one. Now Stoops has lost the last three times they've been in. They've lost, losing to LSU, losing to Florida as well. But they've been one of the best programs in all of college football. But Stoops is only 6-6 in bowl games. So they've struggled. They have struggled mightily in some of these in these bowl games. And that you know, they lost to USC where they were just absolutely embarrassed, you know, 55-19 a few years ago in 2004. Some other contenders in the Big 12, to me, the other two top contenders are, one, Texas A&M, like Oklahoma again. Great offense. Tannehill, one of the better quarterbacks returning in the conference. Good offensive line. Only question about Texas A&M, and a lot of people think this is the best team that Texas A&M has had in a long time. Mike Sherman, of course, the former Green Bay Packer coach, you know, is their head coach. Problems with Texas, a couple things with Texas A&M. Number one, their pass defense is not very good. And again, in a conference where you have about three or four teams that could just throw it all over the place, that doesn't bode well. And they have a very tough schedule. I mean, they have Oklahoma, they host Oklahoma State and Arkansas. They'll be at Oklahoma, at Texas, and hosting Texas Tech. Not an easy schedule for a Texas A&M team, which is expected to do some big things. Remember, they beat Oklahoma last year. Expected to do some big things down there in Aggieland. Also, you have Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State last year won 11 games. Was 11-2. Again, they have a tremendous offense as well. Led by Brandon Weeden at quarterback. Brandon Weeden is about 50 years old, 27-year-old senior quarterback. They could have the best receiver in all of college football, Justin Blackman. A lot of people thought he was going to go pro last year. He decided to come back. Not again. They have a very difficult schedule. They have a pretty tough schedule at Texas A&M, at Texas Tech. Arizona at home might be a tricky game, but they do have Oklahoma at home. That Oklahoma game last year was one of the great games of the season. They lost 47-41, as you know, each team just went up and down the field at will on the defenses. I certainly wouldn't be surprised if we got that kind of game this time around when those two teams heat up, hook up in Bedlam. So, you know, Texas A&M, Oklahoma State are the major contenders to challenge Oklahoma for the Big 12. Also, don't forget about Texas. Texas last year had a tough time, 5-7. Remember, this, you know, Texas had been good for about 10 to 12 wins every single season for about almost a decade, basically. Don't expect Texas to be have another down year. Now, they have some questions at the quarterback. Garrett Gilbert, who, if you remember, played in a national championship game against Alabama when Colt McCoy was knocked out, played well in that game. And you thought that Gilbert was going to, you know, ascend and become a pretty good quarterback. Well, last year he struggled. So the question mark is out. You know, the jury is still out on him. You have Colt McCoy's brother, who's in the mix as far as quarterbacking goes. So if he struggles, I mean, you could see Colt McCoy's brother before the season's out. Texas will have one of the best defenses in the Big 12. Offensively, they're still trying to find their identity. They tried to go to a pro-style offense last year. It did not work. They're going to try to rebuild the running game. They have a highly talented player coming out of college, coming out of high school, a freshman to start. He'll be starting at running back. We'll see if they'll be able to run the ball again. But to me, it's all about Garrett Gilbert. I mean, he is the key that maybe Texas could, if he plays well, who knows? Maybe Texas could shock the world and win the conference. But they will be better than they will not have another season at 5-7. You can expect. You could expect 8 to 10 wins out of Texas this season and expect them to bounce back and be playing in a bowl. So, I like Oklahoma to win the conference, but, Texas A&M, Oklahoma State will be right there. Remember, no Big 12 championship because of them losing Nebraska and Colorado. So you have they'll play a round robin. They'll play a round robin. There's no split division. They'll just play a round robin and go from there. So you'll have that for the Big 12. But we'll see what happens with that. Should be another. This could be again to me. This could be the beginning of the end of the Big 12 conference. I think with Texas A&M leaving, Oklahoma, I think would be out the door. And you might be left with Baylor and Kansas, for all we know. We'll see what happens with that. 347-215-6180 is the call number. When we return, we'll shift over to the league where no contract is guaranteed. We will preview the big boys, the NFL and the NFC East, when we return on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Cyril Quinn on your dial. 40 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call as we shift to the big boys, the NFC, the NFL, as we look at the NFC East. To me, the most exciting and most intriguing division in football. Now, obviously, I have a horse in this division with the Washington Redskins, being a Redskins fan. But, you know, you putting that aside, I mean, this division, you know, has everything in terms of, you know, in terms of star power, and in terms of story, and does not lack for storylines. We're going to begin with the teams, in my eyes, the team to beat, and that's easy in terms because it is the Philadelphia Eagles. Philadelphia Eagles last year won the division at 11-5. We know what they've added defensively. I mean, as they added one of the premier cornerbacks in football, and Nnamdi Asamoah. They add Cullen Jenkins, Jason Babin, Dominique Rogers-Camardi with the Kevin Cobb trade. Defensively, I'm not worried about the Eagles at all. I mean, they should be a legit top five defense, and all the problems they had last year defensively will certainly go away as far as I'm concerned. The thing that concerns me about the Eagles, and it's been certainly talked about and well-publicized and rightfully so, is the offensive line. You look at their offensive line, there's competition at just about every position with the exception of, you know, Jason Peters at left tackle and Ty Harriman's. There's competition at the other positions. I mean, Jamal at center with Jamal Jackson, right tackle with King Dunlap. They brought in Ryan Harris. They're going to start a rookie right guard in Danny Watkins. They're high on him. We'll see. But that is an area of concern that is certain that, you know, that certainly you have to be a little nervous about if you're an Eagle fan. And to me, that is the number one concern out of their team. You can have all the skilled players in the world. The offensive line does not click. They have some major issues, especially with a quarterback like Michael Vick, who, despite the fact that you know, he's elusive. I don't think if you're an Eagle fan that you want to see Michael Vick doing a lot of running. I think you want to see him develop into more, you know, sitting back in the pocket and, you know, kind of being able to pick his spots from there. I don't think you want him doing too much running as much as he did, certainly as much as he did last year. Last year he had a career high in rushing touchdowns. Which is good on one hand. That he was able to score those many touchdowns, but running a little bit too much. The second question to me about the Eagles is Michael Vick. Now, Michael Vick, now listen, they are locked into, you know, the Michael Vick experience. He signed a $100 million contract, $36 million guaranteed. They traded Kevin Cobb. It's Michael Vick's show. That's all there is to it. Vick was tremendous at the start and the middle of last season. Last couple of games, though, last four games, including the Green Bay playoff loss, he was average. You know, he had 9 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and it seems to be like defenses started getting a better read on what the Eagles were trying to do with him, what he was trying to do, what he wanted, what he saw, and his weaknesses, things of that nature. Now it's Michael Vick's turn to adjust to the adjustment that defense has made on him towards the latter part of last season. He is less of a question certainly than the offensive line, but it's something that bears watching with Michael Vick and with the Eagles. Look at the Eagles schedule. It is not that hard. They do have a tough opening with, you know, at St. Louis, at Atlanta, home to New York. But they have a stretch in late October, early November, where they have three straight home games against Dallas, Chicago, and Arizona. That is a sweet deal in the NFL. It's not too many times you'll see a team have three straight home games, especially in the middle of the season. So that, you know, that's certainly something that breaks in their favor. I think the Eagles are going to have a big time year, to be honest with you. I really do. I think they're going to have the best record in the – I think they're going to definitely have the best record in the AFC. I see them at 12-4. I see them at 13-3. I think this team will go into – I think they are a legit Super Bowl contender. Now, you know, we'll see what happens in the playoffs with, you know, Can they get past, you know, can they get past Green Bay? Can they get past New Orleans possibly? You know, that remains to be seen. But they are a legit Super Bowl contender, and they are by far and away the class of this division. Next in line, the New York Giants, New York Football Giants. Last year, Giants barely just missed the playoffs, 10-6, and certainly had they won that, took care of business against the Eagles at home, and that, you know, 31-10 collapse, the whole DeSean Jackson game, that was the difference. That really was the difference in the division. I mean, Giants win that game there in the playoffs, and they would have made the playoffs and won the division. Giants have already lost five players on defense, and the season hasn't started yet. Losing Terrell Thomas, Umanora is going to, you know, could miss the first game against the Redskins. You had another number one draft pick, Prince A from Nebraska, their quarterback. He's going to miss some time. So they're already losing some players on defense. They're going to, you know, the major question mark for the Giants is to me, is two major ones. Number one, their offensive line. Their offensive line, they're trying to replace, you know, Sean O'Hara and Rich Seibert. Now, I understand both those guys are getting older and they were, you know, were becoming injury prone. So replacing them, I get the aspect that they kick those guys to the curb, but, you know, you're replacing them with Will Beatty and David Bass. That's not exactly a who's who as far as offensive lineman goes. I mean, they have one guy on their offensive line that I would trust completely, and that's Chris Knee. By far and away their best player on the line. I mean, they still have McKenzie. He's okay. But again, the offensive line should be the major question mark. And the Giant offensive line is everything, because Giants cannot function if they don't run the football. They are built on that running game. It sets up everything for them. You don't want Eli Manning having to sit back there and try to be like Drew Brees and throw the ball a million times. It won't work. Last year he had 25 picks, and that's going to be my second question mark for him, is Eli Manning. Now, he can sit up here and say how many passes were tipped, third downs, you know, what his percentage was on third down. You can sit up there all you want to say that. The bottom line is 25 picks is 25 picks. He had 25 picks. Overall, he had 30 turnovers. He needs to cut that down by half, okay? Maybe, you know, 12 or 13 picks, 3 or 4 fumbles. So maybe 15, 16 turnovers, which would be understandable. You know, I think Eli Manning is a top 10 quarterback. Now, forget about elite top 5. I think he's a legit top 10 franchise caliber quarterback. I don't think he's great, but he can be clutch. But he needs to, you know, it's time for him, you know, to really step it up. But more importantly, you know, again, you're going to have to watch out for the Giant offensive line as being a major question mark. Giants don't have an easy schedule. I mean, if you look at the Giants' schedule, you know, they need to get off to a good start. You know, they start off with Washington, which is a game that they should win. Then it's home to St. Louis at Philadelphia. The stretch of games that would decide the Giants' season to me would be weeks 4-10. They're at Arizona. They have Seattle, host Seattle, Buffalo, bye week, host Miami, at New England, at San Francisco. Those weeks, they need to make some hay with those. They need to make hay on those in those particular weeks, because they end with Philadelphia, at New Orleans, Green Bay, at Dallas. Host the Redskins, at the Jets, and then home to Dallas. That is a brutal ending to a season. And their team has been known, even over the course of their Super Bowl win, for second half collapses. So need to get off to a decent start and need to really take advantage of that middle part of their schedule. I like the Giants to be 9-7. I think they'll be right there as far as the wild card goes. But I'm not that high on the Giants, but I do like them to finish second in this division to the Philadelphia Eagles. Third place goes, Dallas Cowboys. Dallas Cowboys coming off a 6-10 season last year. Of course, you remember they started out 1-7. Everything just fell apart defensively. Tony Romo got hurt. Dez Bryant got hurt. Dallas, without question, has very good skill position players. At with Romo, the running backs, Felix Jones, if he can stay healthy, Dez Bryant, Miles Austin. Miles Austin is one of the best top five receivers in football. Has developed in that top five, top ten receiver without question. Question for me, that, again, it's a recurring theme in this division, is the offensive line. They're trying to replace three starters. They just cut Andre Gerard. And that offensive line was shaky last year. This year, I mean, who knows? I mean, you're bringing in a couple of new players. Chemistry could be an issue. Their defensive backfield is also suspect. Last year, everybody threw on Dallas. Everybody. So, Terrence Newman is not getting any younger. The safeties are not great. I just wonder. Malcolm Jenkins was very inconsistent. Has a lot of talent. Very inconsistent. I wonder. They tried to address it. It was that was a major shot for them. That was a major failing for them not getting Asuwan. I mean, they definitely needed him. Could have used him. Boy, then of course we're not able to get him. Dallas is one of those teams that can go in either direction. Dallas could be 10-6, 11-5, or they could be 7-9, 8-8. I lean towards 8-8, and again, them missing the playoffs. I just don't completely trust that team. And again, Jerry Jones, along with his son, basically are calling the shots. I don't like that. Never have. Jason Garrett, we'll see him, in year two when the honeymoon is over. He had a great period last year after Wade Phillips was fired. Did a good job going 5-3, but again, it's one thing to be out there winning games when the season is over, and it's another thing to have some pressure, and they have some pressure on you to make the playoffs, and there is pressure for them to make the playoffs without question. So we'll see how he does with that. I'll get to the Redskins in the next segment with the Redskin report. I certainly have believe that they will finish fourth in that division, but I'll get to them coming up in the next segment with the Redskins report. So, overall, major question marks in this division in regards to the offensive line. I like the Eagles big to win this division. I don't think there's any question about it. Injuries were standing. I think the Giants will be decent, not great. Dallas could go in either direction. I like them for it to be a 500 caliber team. So there you go. Giants, Philly, Eagles, Giants, Cowboys, Redskins. That will be the finish of those particular teams in the NFC East. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we'll have the Redskin report, and we'll also preview the Pac-12 conference. That's coming up, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Surreal Quinn. As we discuss the world of sports, Mark Cuban is here on College Game Day with the NBA trophy. That's certainly nice to see. That might be the only NBA you'll see in a long time on ESPN as they continue to, you know, go around in circles. And, you know, who cares? I mean, NBA is, you know, let them go out there and play in Rucker Park and Baltimore. You know, they should start their own league. Why don't they just start their own league? You know, have LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Carmelo Anthony on one coast. Start their own league. I mean, they might as well. Again, that's going to be the only NBA that you see for a very long time. We're going to talk about the Redskins report here. Of course, the Redskins conclude their preseason 3-1. Cut day is today. 53. All the teams will have to get down to 53 players by today. Some of the Redskins that are on the on that borderline, you know, guys like Mike Sellers, Dante Stallworth, Brandon Banks. I expect Sellers and Brandon Banks to make the team. Dante Stallworth, not so sure. Redskins have a lot of receivers, not a lot of quality receivers, but just a lot of receivers. So I'm not so sure what they'll do with him. You know, we'll see what happens with that. Phillip Buchanan also not on the cut list, but has been suspended by the NFL for violating the substance abuse. The drug policy, and so he'll be missing for the first four games. Again, the quarterback situation is still up in the air for the Redskins. I don't know what, help me out as far as the logic of trying to figure out what Mike Shanahan is doing. Rex Grossman did not play the final preseason game against Tampa Bay. And, of course, everybody wanted to jump on that and say, hey, that's a sign that Grossman's going to be the starter. No, it's not. I mean, Shanahan has not tipped his hand this whole entire time. I don't think he tipped his hand with that particular move. It could easily be a smokescreen. I don't know who's going to be the starter. Again, I think it should be Beck, in my opinion. Neither one of them to me has stood out in the preseason. You want to give Grossman a slight edge? I mean, go ahead. I don't know how you gauge it with preseason football, but it's part of the reason why if you're a Redskins fan, you cannot be looking forward towards the season as we look ahead to the Redskins in 2011. Redskins will be better than they were last year as far as their on the field product. I think definitely defensively with what they did, adding Cofield and Otagwe from St. Louis. They're certainly getting a healthy Laurent Landry back if he is fully healthy. That's another question mark that they have. They can't be any worse. I mean, they can only go up defensively. The problem with the Redskins is, the running game will be better. Couple problems with the Redskins, and put the quarterback aside for a second. The receivers, Jabari Gaffney's your number two receiver? I mean, really? I mean, do you trust Jabari Gaffney to make plays? I mean, how many teams has he been on here over the course of his career? I mean, that is your number two. Like, that guy, Jabari Gaffney, couldn't make the Green Bay Packers. Okay? Jabari Gaffney couldn't make the Baltimore Ravens or the New York Giants. There are teams he just wouldn't even be on, let alone being one of their primary receivers. That is a major problem. You know, Santana Moss, he'll get his 80 to 90, 85 catches, 1,000 yards. We expect him, you know, 5 or 6 touchdowns. He'll play well. But who is your number two? Leonard Hergerson has been inconsistent over the course of the preseason. He's a rookie. A third-round pick at that. I don't think he's going to come in and set the world on fire. Are they going to do two tight ends with Cooley and Fred Davis? To me, I'm looking at their offense, and their offense looks very one-dimensional right now in terms of it's just running. I mean, it's just a running game. The running game has a chance to be very good. The offensive line, the Redskins might have the best offensive line in the division. Might. And that's not saying a lot, but the offensive line looks pretty good. We'll see if Trent Williams can take that next step and become a star, stay healthy. you know, Jamal Brown, can he stay healthy? The interior looks better, certainly without, with no Krejci Rabach on it. That's like addition by subtraction. So offensive line should be decent. Should be good in the run. The pass is still kind of iffy on. I'm just worried about the fact that, again, the Redskins, again, the quarterback situation, obviously, and the wide receiver situation scares me because I don't see much there with the lack of wide receivers. Look at the Redskins' schedule. Very tough opening. You know, Giants at home, Arizona at home, you know, at Dallas, at St. Louis, home to Philly. Realistically, you know, you're looking at 1-4, 2-3. Let's be real. I mean, let's be honest about that. Where the Redskins need to make some hay is week 7 through 12. They have at Carolina, at Buffalo, home to San Francisco, at Miami, Dallas, SEL. That's where they need to pick up some wins and if they want to have a shot at, you know, being 500. They're not a playoff team because they're going to finish with the Jets, New England, at the Giants, and at Philly, which is a brutal way to end the season. This is not a playoff team. A lot of pronosticators have the Redskins. You know, I saw 2-14, 3-13, 4-12. So a lot, I mean, pretty much everybody thinks they're gonna just be awful. I don't think they'll. Again, I think that they will play better than they did last year. Would that equate to a better record? I, you know, I see. I had 5-11, 6-10. I settled in on 6-10. I think they'll be 6-10 with their ceiling being 7-9. Again, you can talk all you want about what they've done defensively, the running back situation, you know, Brandon Banks special teams. You cannot hide the quarterback in the NFL, especially in today's NFL. You just can't do it. And right now, they frankly just don't have a quarterback. You're in a division with Tony Romo, Eli Manning, and Michael Vick, three Pro Bowl caliber quarterbacks, and one of them has a Super Bowl. I mean, it's just that, you know, that just can't, you know, that's, you know, they're trying to put lipstick on a pig here. So, you know, until they get that situated, you can't take them seriously until they get that situated with their quarterback situation. So I like the Redskins to be 6-10 this season. They'll be competitive. They'll be improved as far as defensively. But again, they will fall short of, forget about winning the division, they will fall short. They will not be in contention for a playoff spot. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk about the Pac-12 and also who is the best quarterback in all of football. We'll talk about that as well on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. After the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Cyril Quinn. Call number is 347-215-6180. We're going to get into the Pac-12 conference, which I'm telling you right now, it's going to be, before you know it, it'll be the Pac-16. As I expect to see some definite movement in the next couple of years, but for now, it remains the Pac-12, the new edition, you know, with the additions of Utah and also Colorado to the mix. Team to beat, obviously, in the Pac-12, the North, you have the two powerhouses in Oregon and Stanford. Oregon is the team to beat. They returned, you know, returned a lot of their offense last year. The quarterback Darren Thomas, they again, their offense last year was dynamic. I mean, you're talking almost averaging, you know, almost averaging 50 points a game. They you almost get an exercise basically watching them, how quickly they're able to get in plays and different formations. They had just a great offense. They returned a lot of those guys this year and certainly should be right there amongst the leaders in terms of scoring and yards per game in the country. They're going to be hard-pressed, though, to match what they did defensively. I mean, last year, their defense was very underrated because the offense got all the attention. They only gave up about 18 points a game. I think they're not going to be as good. Certainly now, they'll have Cliff Harris back after the LSU game. Harris is, of course, their All-American cornerback. He'll be back. You know, he'll be back after missing this game. But I'll be very interested to watch them on defense. You look at their schedule. To me, they, you know, they have a they have LSU. If they can get past this LSU game, I think it's, I'm not going to say clear sailing, but I think that's going to set them up pretty well to make a return trip to the BCS title game. You know, they are at Stanford. They're at Arizona, but this LSU game is as we discussed before, is a big time game. It's certainly a measuring stick game for them coming off that national championship loss to Auburn. I think I think Oregon can team to beat this conference. I think they will win this conference, but it's all about the big picture for them, and that is trying to get back and win a national championship. The team that they're going to be battling in that Northern Division will be Stanford. Stanford is coming off a great season last year, finished 12-1, destroyed Virginia Tech at the bowl game, as we remember. They have, by far and away, the best player in college football, the guy who certainly will have NFL scouts and front office general managers drooling come 2012 when the draft rolls around. Andrew Luck, best quarterback in the country, is a guy, you know, just, you know, had a, you know, is a leading Heisman Trophy candidate, for that award. Good offensive line, good running game. Question about Stanford. And number one is the loss of Jim Harbaugh. Harbaugh did a great job at building that program basically from nothing. That program hadn't done anything since basically before Harbaugh got there, since Bill Walsh was coaching. That was, you know, way back when. He built up that program. Can this program, you know, are they one of these programs that can be, that you can book for 10 wins a season? I'm not sure they're quite on that level yet. Remember, Stanford is a, you know, is like Notre Dame of the South. Excuse me, Notre Dame of the West in terms of academics. They are very high. They, you know, it's all about the academics there. It's, you know, they're great in athletics as well, but, you know, they are an academic school. You know, can they year in, year out have a national championship caliber team? I'm not so sure. I think they take a small step back. Plus, the schedule is hard. I mean, they have, you know, they're at Arizona, which won't be easy, at USC, host Notre Dame, they host Oregon. So not an easy schedule. Their defense, again, similar to Oregon, I'm not sure their defense is going to be as good as it was last year. They only get up 17 points a game, so you can keep your eye on their defense. But offensively, they should be fine. They don't have a great core of receivers, but when you have a quarterback, the caliber of Andrew Luck, you don't need great receivers. He makes everything. He makes those guys better than what they are anyway. So I think the offense will be fine. I think they will be runner-up to Oregon in that particular in that division. The South Division is wide open. I mean, take your choice. I mean, USC, UCLA, Arizona State. I mean, the South Division is absolutely wide open. Who knows who's going to win that division? Myself, I like Arizona. I like Arizona to win that division. Now, USC will be back as far as being relevant again. They will not have the type of conference they had last year, even though the jury will still be out on Lane Kiffin, whether or not he can coach, because I've never seen a guy given more, having accomplished less in recent memory, and in coaching in general, not just college football coaching, but just coaching pro football, NBA, whatever. I mean, this guy, you know, just given these great jobs, and he hasn't done anything. So jury's still out for him. USC still has talent. Matt Barkley, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Pac-10, Pac-12 is loaded with quality quarterbacks. When you look at Luck, Barkley, Darren Thomas, you know, Nick Foles from Arizona, just name a few. So I expect USC to be right there in the mix. USC can win and the South, but they cannot play in that big Pac-12 championship game. So keep that in mind. Arizona, a lot of people like Arizona State as well. But again, the team I'm looking at in the South is Arizona. Now again, Arizona has a great offense, very good quarterback, great running game. Question marks about them will be their offensive line. They lost a lot of close games last season. Remember, Arizona was 7-1, ranked number 9 in the country midway through the season. Okay, lost a lot of tough games. We'll see if they can, you know, be on the other side of some of those close games and shock the Pac-12 South. But the South, again, take your choice of the South. You have the two power, you know, two heavyweights in the North. I think Oregon wins this conference and contends for a national championship. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we will look at the NFL's top 5 quarterbacks, and as we continue our series of top 5 in the NFL, as countdown to kickoff continues with, you know, Green Bay and New Orleans now less than a week away on coming September 8th. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that and a couple of running backs getting themselves in a little bit of trouble here. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 15 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour. Top 5 quarterbacks. Who are the NFL's 5 best quarterbacks? I will going to tell you right now. At number 5, now continue. Keep in mind, you know, my criteria may be a little different. You know, I obviously talent and accomplishments goes into the mix, but I'm also looking at potential as well. So, you know, talent, age, potential, you know, accomplishments, all that is kind of, you know, thrown into the mix here when I look at the top 5 quarterbacks in the league. So, you know, my list might look a little bit different from most. Coming in at number 5, Drew Brees. Brees, this guy is the most accurate quarterback in the NFL. Career, you know, the career completion percentage is 65%. Of course, you remember you had the season where he had an NFL record for completion percentage at 70%. San Diego, he was good. He was very good. New Orleans, he has been off the charts, especially in terms of his yardage. I mean, he had an off year last year and had over 20 interceptions, but he still had 33 touchdown passes. This guy has been, despite the fact that he just has a 6-6 postseason record, is 13 touchdowns, 2 interceptions in his postseason. So his team's coming up short in the postseason. has not it's not been because of him. Of course, he won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, did not throw an interception. Over the course of that postseason run, did not throw an interception during that run. Outplayed Peyton Manning. Outplayed Peyton Manning during that postseason run, also, and Brett Favre as well. So, took out a couple of and Kurt Warner. So, yeah, I played three Hall of Fame quarterbacks when the Saints made their run to the postseason. Again, this guy is the most accurate quarterback in the league. Basically saves New Orleans franchise along with Sean Payton. I mean, you think about where New Orleans is at before he got there and where they're at now. It's like night and day. Coming at number four, and to many people, this will be a surprise, Peyton Manning. Manning, four-time NFL MVP, has a Super Bowl championship. Playoff record, shaky. Just 9-10 in the playoffs, and I don't want to hear about, you know, he's been carrying them. Listen, he's had talent. I mean, Marvin Harrison is going to be a Hall of Fame wide receiver one of these days. Reggie Wayne is one of the better top half dozen receivers in the league, all pro last year. Dwight Freeney is going to be a future Hall of Famer. He's had Dallas Clark, Edgerrin James early in his career. He's had talent. So playoff record should be better. Again, statistically, when it's said and done, Peyton Manning will be considered the greatest quarterback of all time. He's going to break every major passing record known to man if he stays around, if he decides to stay around, hang around, and play long enough. Listen, every year you can book him down from 4,000 yards, 30 touchdown passes, you know, accurate, the smartest quarterback in the NFL, maybe smarter, one of the smartest players in NFL history. But the bottom line is coming off now two neck surgeries, he's not getting any younger at 35, and that window for Indianapolis may be closing. So, again, playoff record is an issue with me in terms of all-time greats with Peyton Manning. I have him number four on my list. Number three, Big Ben Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger, to me, is probably the most underrated great quarterback in the league. Why more people don't have him as high as I have him is beyond me. This guy does nothing but win. Ever since he got into the league, you know, he's 69-29 as a starter, 10-3 in the playoffs, has already been to three Super Bowls, won two Super Bowls, and he's not even 30 yet. I mean, he's, you know, 28. He's 28 years old. This, you know, again, he's put up better numbers than you expected. His career rating is about 93. He's not going to be a guy that throws 40 touchdown passes, has 4,000 yards passing seasons. He's only had 1 year of 30 or more touchdown passes. Steelers don't ask him to do that. But he is more than capable of airing it out. He's thrown for over 500 yards in a game before. And he does more with less than just about any quarterback that I've ever seen. And the guy, the offensive lines are shaky every year with the Steelers. Doesn't have, you know, Hines Ward will be a Hall of Famer, in my opinion, someday. But Hines Ward does not get double teamed. You know, Antonio Brown's, Mike Wallace's, has Antonio Holmes, doesn't have Holmes anymore. Good, pretty good tight ends, but listen, this guy is a great quarterback. To me, John Elway, like, he's as clutch as they come. No quarterback throughout his first 7 years has more fourth quarter comebacks or come from behind wins. So keep that in mind. Coming in at number two, Tom Brady. Brady, of course, you know, 14-5 in the playoffs, three Super Bowl wins. He is getting a little older though, 34 years old. I expect Brady to have another big season this year. As a starter, he's been off the charts in terms of his record. I mean, 111-32. He has, has lost his last three postseason games. Again, you can easily put him number one. I mean, he's as accomplished as any quarterback, you know, since Joe Montana. The guy, 34 years old, but still playing at a high, high level. I expect him to have a big year. But the thing that puts him down a peg, not a peg, but at number two is the age. The age, to me, is a factor. You saw what happened. You saw them draft a quarterback this year in terms of Ryan Mallett. So, you know, he doesn't have that many years left, but still playing at a high, high level. And coming in at number one, Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers, again, 27 years old. In terms of age, talent, potential, and already what he's accomplished, there's nobody better in the sport right now. You know, for his career, 87 touchdowns, 32 interceptions, has been off the charts in the postseason. In the postseason, with what he's accomplished, when they lost, you know, 4-1 in the postseason. Remember, they lost a couple years ago to Arizona. They did not lose because of him. They, you know, used to, they, 51-45. He played great in that game. Green Bay defense could not stop Arizona and Kurt Warner. To me, if I said this before, and I say it again, I think he's the best player in the sport. If I had a choice for number, if I had a choice, picking any player right now off the roster at any position, Aaron Rodgers would be number one. So, Breeze number five, Aaron Rodgers number one, Tom Brady number two, Roethlisberger number three, Peyton Manning number four, and Drew Brees number five. Those are your top five quarterbacks. Phillip Rivers is right in terms of talent, can throw with anybody in the league. Okay, he would be coming in as number six. The only thing that's keeping him off this list is lack of hardware. All these guys on this list have at least one Super Bowl. Brady and Roethlisberger have multiple Super Bowl wins. So, you know, quarterback position used to be center in basketball. You have to win a championship in order to take that next step. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, I will address our poll question in terms of the tweeting and talk about we'll talk Chris Johnson and Arian Foster as well. That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Hour 347-215-6180 is your call number. Saturday Morning Wake Up Call poll question of the morning was: should there be tweeting allowed amongst pro athletes? I don't know if there's any right or wrong answer with this particular question. All that I know is a couple of guys, to me, put themselves in bad positions with a couple of tweets this week. Begin with Arian Foster, because to me his was the more egregious one. Chris Johnson's was a little bit more understandable. Arian Foster goes out there, and after he receives it and tweets, puts his MRI on Twitter of his hamstring, which is probably maybe the single dumbest thing I've seen a football player do in a long time. And we've seen guys over the last 5 to 10 years do some dumb stuff. First of all, I mean, everybody knows you have a hamstring injury. So why would you make yourself even a bigger target than what you're already going to be as a running back who gets hit on every play? Running back, that's why running backs have a short shelf life. They get hit every play. So here you go, defense. Here you go, Troy Polamalu, every hit me right here. Here you go, Ray Lewis. This is where I want to be hit. Here you go, Dwight Freeney. There it is, my hamstring in the flesh. I mean, how dumb is that? Now, Chris Johnson, you know, goes out there, attacks the fans, you know, calls them fake fans. Now, he claims that he was receiving some racist tweets. He was emotional anyway. And again, it's a contract situation, so that can bring out some emotion. He ends up getting his money anyway. You know, the 4-year extension, $53 million, $30 million guaranteed. His was a little more understandable. But Arian Foster's was just flat-out stupid. And there's no two ways about it. And it got me thinking, you know, should these guys be allowed to tweet? I mean, and girls as well, because you know, you do have women's pro basketball. And I just think the whole Twitter thing has just gotten out of control. I mean, if you want to know something about an athlete, want to know what they're thinking, what they're doing, just go on Twitter. I mean, guys, you know, I'm retiring. It gets Twitter. Oh, man, had a bad game on Twitter. Updates on injuries on Twitter. Everything is on Twitter. Congratulations, Michael Vick, on Twitter. You know, I guess you can't ban Twitter from these guys because it does, you know, we are talking about some, it does violate freedom of speech. But to me, it has to be some type of limitations has to be put on there. Like, if I'm a football coach, listen, you're not tweeting. You're not allowed, you wouldn't be allowed to tweet, you know, during the week on game day. If you're going to tweet, you're going to tweet during the offseason. That would be the only time if I were a head coach. And I would have some stiff fines for, you know, for guys who did tweet during the week or on game day. Some big-time fines. And you, in the NFL, you know, guys don't like to get fined. You know, guys don't sneeze. Unlike the NBA and Major League Baseball, guys don't sneeze at $10,000 in the NFL. That's a lot of money. Could you get away with that in the NFL? In the NFL with the union, probably not. But I would just like something done about, you know, about tweeting. It's just, you know, seeing, you know, every time something is done or something has to be said, it's through Twitter. I would not mind. If professional sports banned Twitter, I would love it. To me, it would be protecting these guys from themselves in many respects. Again, if you're Arian Foster, you really took a picture of your hamstring, of the X-ray, and put it on your Twitter page. Of course, we began the program again with LSU, Oregon tonight, against college football, first national championship, national championship caliber game, first referendum game. Bigger game for LSU, bigger game for Oregon than it is LSU. Oregon, LSU can afford a loss and still rebound and get to a championship. I don't think Oregon can. I think if Oregon were to lose this game, then that would be it for them as far as them winning a national championship. So to be much bigger game for Oregon. It's going to be a pro LSU crowd. They're in Dallas. The SEC, those schools, they do travel. They travel big time. SEC, of course, has been good in these spots, in these kickoffs in the last 3 years, but the competition level has not been on par with what you're going to see tonight from the Oregon Ducks. I think Oregon was a very close game. We'll see what happens with that. Enjoy the rest of your week. I will see you next week on the season premiere of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, Season 4. We'll talk about the NFL and much, much more. Have a great week.